Before we begin today's session, I'd like to share with you something from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur about the glories and nature of Krishnadas Kaviraj's Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's on the back of your audiobook if you want to have a look at it. If all the books in the world were destroyed, leaving only Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, then people would still be able to achieve the ultimate goal of life. And even if Srimad Bhagavatam was lost, leaving only the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there would still be no loss to humanity. For even that which has not been revealed in the Bhagavatam is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Supreme Absolute Truth is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the combined form of Radha and Krishna. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is His sound incarnation. The divine mystery of Radharani's divine status and glories are found therein. Can there be any doubt, therefore, of the supreme status of this piece of transcendental literature? So what fascinated me was that in the chapter that we're studying at the moment and discussing at the moment, Madhya 20, we're up to verse 189. And 189 to 243 are dealing with Vaikuntha Tatra. Bit of a dichotomy. What is happening? So, when these things come to my mind, I of course have to figure it out. It's just the way my mind works. So, the first thing that came to my mind was the second verse. Asad Goswami Asaka to give us a very strong clue of actually what we're looking at when we look at works like Krishnadas Kaviraj's Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Sadharma Sanstapako Lokanam Idakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandina Mattaliko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yuga Shri Jiva Gopalako.
I offer my respectful obeisances under the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures for the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Very packed verse. The first thing that I want to have a look at is the first two words, Nana Shastra. So these two words, what we're looking at here is various revealed scriptures, different revealed scriptures. So we have to put that in a perspective that makes sense to us. And that is that the aim that Mahaprabhu gave them was to establish eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to establish universal eternal Dharma for everyone, not just sectarian teachings for a few followers. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks of all the rivers of different religions eventually flowing into the ocean of Krishna Bhakti given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this will happen not by force and by conquest, which is quite often the way that things happen, but rather it will happen by culture and education. These are the real weapons for the massive change that is going to be required to affect the order of Mahaprabhu. So this is, and we can understand that Actually, I wanted to have a look at a couple of evidences of this in Mahaprabhu's preaching. The first one that came to mind was his preaching to Vyankarabhata. He was in Sri Rangachetra, and Vyankarabhata is a Vaishnava Ramanuja Sampradaya. So he's a worshipper of Lakshmi Narayan. So, you know, and how does Mahaprabhu deal with that? I don't want to go into the detail, it's in Madhya 9, but I want to read a few verses of what Vyankarabhata says in conclusion. The whole text would be starting from about 138 to 162, but I'm just going to read 157 to 162. It's very sweet. He's just, you know, Mahaprabhu has been spent 4 months with him. They've developed quite a strong, intimate relationship, one of friendship and a lot of joking, actually. Mahaprabhu started preaching in this case was joking, because he's dealing with a cultured person. I want somebody with a sensitive heart. And at the conclusion of all that, Venkatabhadra tells him, after hearing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's so beautiful what he says. Vyankarabhata then says, I am an ordinary fallen living entity, but you are Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God Himself. The transcendental pastimes of the Lord are unfathomable, and I do not know anything about them. Whatever you say, I accept as the truth. I have been engaged. You have to remember that one of the main reasons that Vyankarabhata was actually attracted to him when he first saw him, when Mahaprabhu first came to Rangachetra, is because not only was he extremely beautiful, but he was extremely learned. And for someone to appreciate learning means they are learned. So when he's saying that I don't know anything, it's a statement of humility and part of the superior. I have been engaged in the service of Lakshmi Narayan, and it is due to their mercy that I have been able to see your lotus speech. Out of your causeless mercy, you have told me the glories of Lord Krishna. No one can reach the end of the opulence, qualities, and forms of the Lord. I can now understand that devotional service unto Krishna is the supreme form of worship. Out of your causeless mercy, you have made my life successful simply by explaining the facts. So we get a lot of understanding from this of the nature of Mahaprabhu's preaching. He knew his facts, but also he has a way of capturing the heart, not just convincing the mind and the intelligence. It's very, very beautiful. And the other one that I thought of was from the Tapavadis, also in South India, and it's also from Madhya 9, but in Volume 4, and it's a very different conclusion. Mahaprabhu was again going to a lot of trouble to explain to him that, you know, there's a few things maybe you should have a think about, you know, but it's interesting what the Acharya of the Tapavadis says. We're looking at Madhya 9, 245 to 278. I'm going to be reading from 273. After hearing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Acharya, the Tapavada Sampradaya, became very ashamed. Upon observing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's rigid faith in Vaishnavism, he was struck with wonder. The Tapavada Acharya replied, "What you've said is certainly factual. It is the conclusion of all the revealed scriptures of the Vaishnavas. Still, whatever Madhvacharya has ascertained to be the formula for our party, we practice as a party policy." So even though Mahaprabhu defeated, you know, him and took the time to explain so much to him, still it didn't really touch his heart so much. So Mahaprabhu is entrusting the writing of the philosophical and theological foundation of Gaudiya Vaishnavas is very much to Sanatana Goswami. That means he has to have a thorough grasp of the whole realm, not just what he likes, which is what we tend to do. We go for what we like. But what he's doing is very different. And if that's lacking, if that holistic understanding of the culture and the philosophy is lacking, then how is he going to be able to convincingly speak to those who have a path of their own, like the Tathagatas, like the Sri Sampradaya followers? How is he going to be able to convince them of the higher truths that Mahaprabhu is giving? If they can see that what's been given by Mahaprabhu includes a far deeper understanding of their own philosophy than their Shastra's presenting, it's a good start to winning a few followers. Yeah? A couple of other things I wanted to mention about this moving mission, because it's so amazing. So they're very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the Rudra scriptures. This is essential, scrutinizingly studying. We often have a habit of very whimsically, surface reading, skim reading. We don't bother to really contemplate. Manana is not there. Contemplation of what we're reading is not there. Prayer about what we're reading is not there. So we have to remember that these books are very different than the other books that we may pick up. This Shastra. So we can pray to the Shastra also. It's a living book. We can pray to the author of the Shastra. In effect, in Gurukul standards, that is practice. It's called Sampat. First, before you take study, a Shastra for study, you pray to the author, you pray to the book, you pray to the parampara for entrance into the understanding. And then you do your study, and at the end, you approach those same people and you ask them for remembrance of what you've read, ability to practically apply what you've read. Very, very different approach than information gathering. Very different approach. Because when we're looking at this kind of work, especially with books like Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, not to mention the Sandarbhas, then what you're looking at is the need not only for refined consciousness, but expanded consciousness. We're not looking at intelligence. Intelligence cannot fathom a lot of this stuff. You cannot fathom it. There has to be a subtlety and a depth of consciousness that can only come from a heart that's in tune with your sampradaya. When you have the shelter, it will come to a point when you've been practicing for some time, naturally you'll be attracted to particular acharyas in your line, and you'll take shelter of them. And by their shelter, you'll be able to understand what our Shastra is saying. Prabhupada's books, for those who have been reading of them for 40 years, what we read that first day is very different than what we're seeing in the book now. Both are really valid, but what we're saying is that the books, as you grow, the books you read are more. So that's an important thing. Yeah, so very scrutinizingly studying, and not for the aim of knowledge. What we're looking at, why they were doing it, was to fulfill Mahaprabhu's aim to establish eternal religious principles for everyone's benefit, not just one group's. Everyone's benefit. So you see how broad the consciousness is. They are honorable in the three worlds. They're worth taking, this is an interesting statement. They're worth taking shelter of because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis. Now, quite often, especially these days, we take our key from the Hindi movies. And absorbing the mood of the gopis means the sari is worn a little lower on the hips, the way you use your arms, is a little, you know, different ways that we move. This is the mood of the gopis. And engage in the chance of loving service of Radha and Krishna. That can mean all sorts of things. But if we want to actually have an understanding of the mood, we can take it from what's on the back side, the flip side. And that's the given by Mahaprabhu in Sikshastika 8. I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and he should remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. We can start living this from now. Because our mentality is very dualistic, quite often we make difficulties crippling and disturbing influence in our life. But if we can actually just, even if it's just theoretical in the beginning stages, if we can learn to understand that whatever Krishna wants, on his terms. We've tried them on our terms for many, 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 many years. Hasn't brought much success. So, very, very interesting. The other thing that I find fascinating about this is that this second verse is that you notice that the transcendental service that they're engaged in, the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna, their absorption is in the service of the combined form of Radha Krishna. The absorption is in the mood of service of Mahaprabhu. And you'll notice that all of our acharyas are in Manjari Bhav. They're not manifesting that in their sadhika vesh. But, you know, they're coming, they're Manjaris who are coming. Now that's significant. Because the Manjaris, they most perfectly follow Sikshastika 8. They have no interest in personal sense gratification. They don't even want to personally enjoy or engage with Krishna. So who is more qualified to head up a mission than people of this mood, people of this caliber? That they're here only for the purpose of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahyami. And it's so amazing when you read their books, their bhajans in particular. Really, really quite something. Any questions? Oh, no, there's just a few thoughts I want to share with you before we start the discussion. Any thoughts on anything? Okay, let's move into 189. So as I said before, 189 to 243, looking at Vaikuntha Tattva. The first expansion of the Chaturvyuha, quadruple forms, is unique. There is nothing to compare with them. These quadruple forms are the source of unlimited quadruple forms. We're talking about Vaibhavilas. So why this expansion is unique and nothing compares with it is explained in 190. These four Prabhav, the last forms of Lord Krishna, reside eternally in Dwarka and Mathura, which means that they're in Krishnaloka, manifesting from there. So that makes them very, very special. From Sankarshan, manifesting from Sankarshan. From the original quadruple expansion, 24 forms are manifest. They differ according to the placement of weapons in their four hands. They are called Vaibhavilas. But Krishna again expands, and within the Parabhyoma, the spiritual sky, he is situated in fullness as a four-handed Narayan, accompanied by expansions of the original quadruple form. Well, let's just have a look at our map, because when you just see it, It's in the page 41 from memory. When you see it, how it's actually happening, it makes a lot more sense. So what we're looking at, we can see that we're not looking at the Swayam Prakash or the Prabhav Prakash. We're not looking at the direct expansions of Krishna. Page 41. We're looking at expansions. Krishna is coming from Krishna, and then you've got expansions from him. So we're in the spiritual world, we're in Vaikuntha at this point of time in discussion. We've talked about the Vilas forms. I want you to cross out that middle. That's a mistake. That middle line, forearm divisional forms expanded from Balaram. Cross out expanded in Vaikuntha. We're expanding from the spiritual sky above that. So just cross that out. That's I don't know how that crept in, but it's not accurate. So this is where we are right now. So we're looking at it coming down from Balaram. And we're looking at the Vilas. There are two kinds, Prabhav Vilas and Vaibhav Vilas, which you'll read about now in the book. Might be a good idea to keep a record if you can comfortably do that, so you can look at it as we go along. Thus the original quadruple forms again manifest themselves in the second quadruple expansion. The residences of these second quadruple expansions cover the four directions. I'm on 194. Again, this quadruple forms expand three times, beginning with Keshav. That is the fulfillment of the pastime forms. Out of the Chaturvyuha, there are three expansions of each and every form, and they are named differently according to the position of the weapons. The Vasudeva expansions are Keshava, Narayan, and Madhava. Now, for us, I feel I need to say this and explain it, because for us, we feel this is not so interesting to me. What's this got to do with me? Right, all this detail. But the thing is that we have absolutely no idea of how blessed we are by the perspective that Prabhupada and Acharyas have given us. They have given us Galok perspective, Raj perspective. But for the Madhva, for Ramanuja, they'd be very much interested in this. They'd be fascinated by this. So that's why Mahaprabhu is telling Sanatana Goswami. Because we don't want to exclude the Madhvas and Ramanujas. Mm-hmm. Can you see it? So, you know, for us, it's not just what interests us that's important. Mahaprabhu's mission is a bit wider than our interests. Just a little bit. Okay, 196. The expansion of Sankarshan, a Govinda, Vishnu, and Madhusudan. This Govinda is different from the original Govinda, for he is not the son of Maharaj Nanda. The expansions of Prajurna are Trivikram, Vamana, and Sridhar. The expansions of Aniruddha are Hrishikesh, Parvanabha, and Damada. These 12 are the predominating deities of the 12 months. Keshav is the predominating deity of Agrahayan. Narayan is the predominating deity of Porsha. The predominating deity for the month of Magh is Madhava. And the predominating deity for the month of Phagun is Govinda. Vishnu is the predominating deity for Chaitra. And Madhusudan is the predominating deity for Vaikuntha. Vaishak. In the month of Vaishta, the predominating deity is Trivikram. In Ashta, the deity is Vamana. In Shravan, the deity is Sridhar. And in Bhadra, the deity is Hrishikesh. In the month of Ashwin, the predominating deity is Padmanabha. And in Kartik, it is Damada. This Damada is different from Radha Damada, the son of Nandamaraj in Vrindavan. Note that. Because most of it is, they're thinking it's Damodarsana and associated, because the pastime happened on Diwali day. by abiding with Krishna. So they think it's the same Dhammada. But the presiding deity of the month is different Dhammada, it's not Radha Dhammada. When putting the 12 tilak marks on the 12 places of the body, one has to chant the mantra consisting of these 12 Vishnu names. After daily worship, when one anoints the different parts of the body with water, these names should be chanted as one touches each part of the body. Now, in the verse itself and in the word for word, we don't find any mention of after worship, after daily worship. But Prabhupada has put it here. I have absolutely no idea why. I'm not so much into deity worship. The only thing I found interesting is that it is in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. It's a very brief commentary that he gives, but he does write Piyarapara, Pujarapara, which means after puja. So Prabhupada's got it from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but I don't know what Bhaktivinoda Thakur means by that. Do you have any idea? What that's...
Oh, sorry, Mother, I didn't get that.
He's saying after daily worship.
After daily worship.
Yes. So immediately my mind said, after daily worship, I know it's before daily worship. But with the acharyas, it's talking about Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us, you know, pujara para. We're looking at after. I don't know why that is. When one anoints the different parts of the body with water, these names should be chanted as one touches each part of the body. Now this is a very interesting point that Krishnadas Kaviraj is making here. Anoint the different parts of the body with water. So you see, there's a subtlety of culture. Again, we have to remember we're reading PhD, so we have to fill in a few blanks so that we understand what's actually being said here. But the point is that it's not the clay that is protected; it's the mantra, and the mantra is carried by the water. So Krishnadas Kaviraj has said that like that, it's a mantra that's protecting. But then you notice in Prabhupada, and it's also Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in his book, what says the same verse, everything as Prabhupada is giving. But Prabhupada immediately says tilak. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur immediately says tilak, even though that's not what Krishnadas Kaviraj says in the Bengali. So why did they do that? They do that because they then know the nature of the Kali Yuga mind. Oh, I don't have to waste my time mixing, you know. I just take a bit of water. Kali Yuga mind is like that. But then, where is the culture and where is the tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism? If you're doing your tilak with water, who's going to see it? You see? So the pragmatists, you know, Krishna, the Rupanugas are pragmatists. They're very, very practical people. Okay, you know, Krishna's coming to said, what about if we also say water, that's all they're going to do. These Kali Yugians, we know what they're like. You know, so maybe we should just do it a little bit differently. So they say, tilak. Yeah. Okay, 203. From Vasudeva, Sakasham, Bhajima, Aniruddha, there are 8 additional pastime expansions. O Sanatan, please hear me as I mention their names. He's asked who I am. Who am I? And look at the answer he's been given. So technical. But because Sanatan Goswami, he's going to be entrusted with presenting the Sambandha Tattva. He has to know all of this. Mm-hmm. It has to be in his grasp. How can you provide a foundation otherwise? You can't do it. So, but for us, I mean, given our level of intelligence, and given the level of intelligence of those we mostly preach to, I don't think we need to know all the detail, but it's good to know where it is. You know, so that if you need to quote it for some reason, or you need to remind yourself about it for some reason, at least you know where to go. Yeah? The 8 pastime expansions are Purushottam, Achyuta Nrisimha, Janardhan, Hare Krishna, Adoksajan, and Upendra. Of these 8 expansions, 2 are pastime forms of Vasudev. The names are Adoksajan and Purushottam. The 2 pastime forms of Sankarshan are Upendra and Achyuta. the pastime forms of Prajumna, Nrisinga, and Janardhan, and the pastime forms of Aniruddha, Hari, and Krishna. All these 24 forms constitute the chief Prabhavilas pastime forms of the Lord. They name differently according to the position of the weapons in their hands. Now, I'm sure there are reasons why they hold their weapons in different hands. And I'm sure that if Sanatana Goswami asked Mahaguru, he could tell him. But it's not given here. It's just going to drive us nuts by. this one holds that one. Of all these, the forms that differ in dress and features are distinguished as by Bhavavilas. Of them, Prabhanava, Trivikram, Nrisingha, Vamana, Hare Krishna, and so on, all have different bodily features. Vasudeva and the three others are direct Prabhav pastime forms of Lord Krishna. Of these quadruple forms, the pastime expansions are 20 in number. All these forms preside over different Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual world. So he's obviously still in Vaikuntha. He's still talking Vaikuntha Tattva. Beginning from east in consecutive order, in each of eight directions there are three different forms. Although they all have their residence eternally in the spiritual sky, some of them are situated within the mature universes. There is an eternal residence of Narayan in the spiritual sky. In the upper portion of the spiritual sky is a planet known as Krishna Loka, which is filled with all opulences. The planet of Krishna Loka is divided into three sections, Gokul, Mathura, and Dwarka. So we're hearing this Chaturvyuha, they're not manifested in Gokul, but they are manifested in Mathura and Dwarka. Gokul is only Braj, is only Vrindavan pastime. The location of eternally resides at Mathura and Lord Purushottam, known by the name Jagannath, eternally resides in Nilachala. At Prayag, the Lord is known as Bindu Madhava, and at Mandara Prabhat, the Lord is known as Madhusudan. Vasudeva, Pabhanaba, and Janardhan reside at Anandaranya. At Vishnu Kanchi, there is Lord Vishnu, at Mayapur, Lord Hari, and throughout the universe, a variety of forms. We'll leave the purport for now, we'll just go on. Within the universe, the Lord is situated in different spiritual manifestations. These are situated on seven islands in nine sections, thus their pastimes are going on. Now the purport to this, that Prabhupada's given for this, actually very much clarifies what we're talking about, factually speaking, when we're talking seven islands. So we'll have a look at this. The seven islands are mentioned in Siddhanta Shiromani. The seven islands dreeps are known as Jambu, Shaka, Shalmali, Kusha, Koncha, Gomeda, or Plaksha, Pushkar. The planets are called dreep. Outer space is like an ocean of air. Just as there are islands in the watery ocean, these planets in the ocean of space are called dreepers or islands in outer space. So it's pretty phenomenal.
They're not like islands like we
know. Like we know them.
Yeah.
They're islands in space.
Space, air.
Air, not in water. Ah. Yeah. And then there are nine khandas. So khanda, it's also another name for khanda, is Varsha. And this means the valley between two mountains. You've got the valley between two mountains. So there are nine of these also. Bharat, Kinnara, Hari, Kuru, Paramaya, Ramyaka, Ilavrita, Vajrastha, or Ketumala. These are different parts of Jambudvip. There's only one of the dreeps, Jambudvip. So a valley between two mountains called. See how small we are. The Lord is situated in all universes in different forms just to please his devotees. Thus the Lord destroys irreligious principles and establishes religious principles. It's very sweet what Prabhupada says in this purport. In the material world, the Lord is situated in different acharmutis or deities in the temples, just to decrease the material activities of the conditioned soul and increase his spiritual activities. Isn't that sweet? Particularly in India, there are many temples throughout the country. Devotees may take advantage of them and go to Lord Jagannath, Lord at Jagannath Puri, Vrindavan, Prayag, Mathura Hadra, and Vishnu Kanchi. When the devotees travel to these places and see the Lord, they become very happy in devotional service. So how merciful is Krishna? And how true it is. What Prabhupada is saying here is so true. Just by having deities, yeah, it increases our material activity so much.
Yes.
Decreases. Yeah? It increases our spiritual activity.
Yes.
Of these forms, some are considered incarnations. Examples are Lord Vishnu, Lord Trivikram, Lord Nrisimha, Lord Vamana. My dear Sanatan, just hear from me as I tell you how the different Vishnu Murtis hold their weapons, beginning with a disc, and how they are named differently according to the placement of objects in their hands. Okay, so let's start with Kiligan. What are the four things that they hold in, these guys hold in their hands?
Shantaka.
Okay. So, we have to remember, we explained in the fourth canto, 24th chapter, one of Prabhupada's purpose. He explains that the lotus and the conch are the Benedictine devotees. And the other two are for dealing with the demons. But he makes the point that both are auspicious. Both his dealing with the demons with these two and are auspicious. And obviously for the devotees. Nothing that Krishna does is inauspicious. So this is going to be a bit of a trial, but then see how you go with it. The procedure for counting begins with the lower right hand and goes to the upper right hand, the upper left hand, and the lower left hand. Lord Vishnu is named according to the order the objects are held in his hands. So for someone who is a Lakshmi Narayan worshipper, a worshipper of Vaikuntha, well, this would be fascinating. Keep that in mind, that's what we do. According to Siddhartha Samhita, which is a revealed scripture, there are 24 forms of Lord Vishnu. First, I shall describe according to the opinion of that book the location of the weapons beginning with the disc. This is Mahaprabhu speaking. This is Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahyanya Mahaprabhu speaking. Take note of that. Sometimes we have a thing, because we're a little bit sahajistic, we have a tendency to think that any depth of understanding in these areas is dry. Logic. Yeah? But you notice that those who have come from Mahaprabhu's mission, they're dealing with it a lot. And we'll find a few pupas like Prabhupada that make that very, very clear. There's one coming up soon. In his lower right hand, Lord Vasudeva holds a club, in the upper right hand a conch shell, in the upper left hand a disc, and in the lower left hand a lotus flower. In his lower right hand, Sankarshan holds a club, in his upper right hand a conch shell, in his upper left hand a lotus flower, and in his lower left hand a disc. Vajuna holds a disc, conch, club, and lotus. Aniruddha holds a disc, club, conch, and lotus. Thus, in the spiritual sky, the expansions, headed by Vasudev, hold weapons in their own respective order. I am repeating the opinion of Siddhartha Samhita in describing them. Lord Keshav holds a lotus, conch, disc, and club. Lord Narayan holds a conch, lotus, club, and disc. Lord Madhav holds a club, disc, conch, and lotus. Lord Govinda holds a disc, club, lotus, and conch. Lord Vishnu holds a club, lotus, conch, and disc. Lord Madhusudan holds a disc, conch, lotus, and club. Lord Trivikram holds a lotus, club, disc, and conch. Lord Vamana, it's so amazing, because by Prabhupada's mercy, We don't have to know this. We just have to look for the blue boy with two arms. Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Trivikram holds a club, lotus club, disc and conch. Lord Brahmana holds a conch, disc, club and lotus. Lord Sridhar holds the lotus, disc, club and conch.
Lord Rishikesh holds the club, disc, lotus and conch. Lord Padmanabh holds the conch, lotus, disc and club. Lord Damodar holds the lotus, disc, club and conch. Lord Purushottam holds the disc, lotus, conch and club. Lord Achyuta holds the club, lotus, disc and conch. Lord Nishima holds the disc, lotus, club and conch. Lord Janardhan holds the lotus, disc, club and conch and club. Sri Hari holds the conch, disc, lotus and club. Lord Shri Krishna holds the conch, club, lotus and disc. Lord Adhokshara holds lotus, club, conch and disc. Lord Upendra holds the conch, club, disc and lotus. Okay. According to the higher Shisha Pancharatra.
Now notice it in the word for word Prabhupada in both cases. He's mentioning this is revealed scripture. This is not somebody's concoction. It's probably, I don't know the either of the shastras, but I would guess that it's from Sri, it's from another sampradaya that's dealing with this. Yeah, it'd have to be from the sampradaya that's dealing with this kind of thinking place on the bed.
According to the higher Shisha Pancharatra, there are 16 personalities. I shall not describe that opinion of how they hold the weapons. Do you want me to read the puppet?
No, not the puppet.
Okay. Keshava is described differently as holding the lotus, conch, club and disc, and Madhava is described as holding the disc, club, conch and lotus in his hands. According to the higher Shisha Pancharatra, Narayan and other are also presented differently as holding the weapons in different hands. Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, indicated as the son of Maharaj Nanda, has two names. One is Swayam Bhagavan and the other is Leela Purushottam. Lord Krishna personally surrounds Dwarakapuri as its protector. In different parts of the city, in nine places, he expands in nine different forms. The nine personalities mentioned are Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Narayan, Narasimha, Hayagriv, Varaha and Brahma. I have already described the pastime and Prakash forms. Now please hear about the different personal expansions.
Okay, so from 243 to 377 when we're talking material tattva, material sky tattva. And we're going to be looking specifically at Smongsa, the six kinds of avatars. So we've shifted gear. We're out of the Vaikuntha realm. Have another look at the map and see where we're going. We have Baladev expanding in Vilas and Svangsa. So we have just had a quick look at the Vilas and how that's coming down through right from the top, right from Dwarka Mathura in spiritual sky in Krishna Loka, then into the Vaikunthas and then into how they expand in the material sky. But now what we're going to be starting to look at is Svangsa, where we're looking at the six different kinds of avatars and what they're about. Okay. The first personal expansion is Sankarshan and the other incarnations like the fish incarnation. Sankarshan is expansion, the Purusha or Vishnu. The incarnations such as Matsya, the fish incarnation, appear in different yugas for specific pastimes. That's focal, but it's interesting. The Purusha avatars are the lords of the universal creation. These are the Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, Gaba Dakshaya Vishnu, and Hira Dakshaya Vishnu. There are also Leela avatars, and these include Chatrasan, Narad, Varaha, Matsya, Yagna, Nara Narayan, Kavani Kapila, Dattatraya, Hayarasirsa, Hansa, Dhruva Priya, Vishnigaba, Rishab, Pritu, Nishinga, Kuma, Dambantari, Mohini, Vamana, Baba Parasham, Raghavendra, Vyasa, Pralambari, Balaram, Krishna, Buddha, and Kalki. These 25 personalities of Godhead are known as Leela avatars. So these are the 25 Leela avatars already mentioned. Because they appear in each day of Brahma or in each Kalpa millennium, they're sometimes known as Kalpa avatars. Of these incarnations, Hans and Mohini are not very prominent or well known, but they are listed among the Prabhav avatars. The pillar Dattatreya, Rishabh, Dambantari, and Vyas are eternally situated and very well known. They are also counted amongst the Prabhav incarnations. Koma, Matsya, Narayan, Varaha, Hayagriva, Krishnagarbha, and Baladeva, Kirabala, Masura, are counted among the Vaiva avatars. There are six types of incarnations, avatars of Krishna. One is the incarnation of Vishnu, Purusha avatars, and another is the incarnations meant for the performance of pastimes, Lila avatars. There are incarnations that control the material qualities, Guna avatars, incarnations of the Manus, Mamantara avatars, incarnations in different millenniums, Yuga avatars, and incarnations of empowered living entities. Now, just have a look at this next verse. Childhood and boyhood are the typical ages of the deity. Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, performed his pastimes as a child and as a boy. Now, if you don't, if you're not PhD literate, you may not be able to make sense of this. Because what's happened is Krishna Das Kaviraj just mentioned, okay, there's six times of incarnation. But straight after he's listed them, then he's saying childhood and boyhood are the typical ages of the deity. Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, performed his pastimes as a child and a boy. Now, because we're not literate, PhD literate, then we have to do a little bit of homework on this. So let's do that, because otherwise it's not going to make any sense to us. So unfortunately, neither Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Bhaktisiddhanta have written purport on this particular verse, because obviously for them, it's not needed. You know, people know, right? Just us, we don't know. So then maybe we need some background. So what we want to have a look at, four questions that came to my mind. So I'll just ask the question and then I'll give the answer. Why? Why is he mentioning boyhood and childhood? Straight after he's talking about the six kinds of incarnations. Very interesting insight is given in Adi 2, 100 purport. In the purport, Prabhupada says, the personality of Godhead manifests himself in six different features, Prabhav, Vaibhav, empowered incarnations, partial incarnations, we just heard about that. Childhood and boyhood. All in the same sentence. I'll repeat it. The personality of Godhead manifests himself in six different features, Prabhav, Vaibhav, empowered incarnations, partial incarnations, childhood and boyhood. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, whose permanent feature is adolescence, enjoys his transcendental proclivities by performing pastimes in these six forms. In these six features, there are unlimited divisions of the personality of Godhead's forms. So we're getting a little bit of a look. And Krishna Das Kaviraj, he told us in Adi 2.99, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is eternally in adolescence, is a primeval lord, the source of all incarnations. He expands himself in these six categories that we've just read of forms to establish his supremacy throughout the universe. And in 97, he tells us that Krishna enjoys himself in these six primary expansions. So what we can understand from these little glimpses of light is that this 247 is another framework key. Because what we're being told here is, okay, these are the six kind of avatars that we're going to discuss now. But don't forget, avatari also comes as avatar. You have to remember, you have to put things in perspective, you have to remember that. So avatari comes as avatar. And when he comes, and he's performing Prakat Leela, not Aprakat, and Spotify is still eternal. It's eternal because it's constantly going on through the universes. But then it has two particular features that are unique to that form that it does manifest in Prakrit: childhood and boyhood. The characteristics, and this is made clearer in a verse of Rupa Goswami that we'll mention a bit later. I just want to read a little bit from another Vrindavan Shampo to expand our consciousness a little bit, because we have a tendency to be very vague and very shallow. Oh yeah, Krishna. But the thing is that the more we know, the more the consciousness expands, the deeper it goes, the more the heart is going to be attracted. So let's have a little look at this. We're talking about Krishna in Prakrit. And still, it's his eternal form. It's not a different form than he's manifesting there. He's descended here in that same form. Krishna's eternal form is that of a 15-year-old youth. However, his Kumara and Bhagavata Leelas, childhood and boyhood pastimes, also eternally remain within his body. According to his sweet will, Krishna manifests one particular pastime form or another. So that means he's not bound by a time frame. He can, at will, he can manifest his pastime forms. Krishna displays his different pastime periods to fulfill the desires of his devotees, who themselves are wish-fulfilling creepers. Although the stages of his childhood, boyhood, and youthful pastimes differ in nature, they do not conflict with each other. Krishna, the embodiment of transcendental bliss, maintains the eternal Kishore form of youth within himself. His pastimes, therefore, do not undergo any transformation. In order to nourish his Balya Leela or childhood pastimes, Krishna conceals his six opulences and his form of eternal youth by his sweet will. This is the explanation of Krishna's pastimes. Although Krishna showed his manifold opulences when he killed Patana, Trinavata, and other demons, he quickly hid these powers in order to preserve the sweet mellow Vatsalya Rasa. Therefore, the influence of Krishna's divine majestic powers, Aishwarya, remain in the background so that he can relish the sweet flavor, Madhurya, of his Vrindavan pastimes with his intimate loving friend servants. Within Krishna's transcendental body of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, the various mellows of parental affection, friendship, and paramour love reach perfection. Why does Krishna perform these pastimes? To favor his devotees, by fixed in the mood of Vatsalya, Sakya, and Madhura Balas. Krishna allows himself to come completely under their control. These various pastime periods of Krishna are eternal and beyond judgment and argument. Now you have to think about it. When you take darshan of Krishna Balaram, just Krishna Balaram. I love Krishna Balaram. Yeah. But the thing is that, I'll read on and then we'll discuss a little further. It's fascinating what's being, just in this one verse, what is being given is quite amazing. So what we really understanding from what we've just read is that the it's really amazing. Krishna is manifesting in Prakrit Leela these different bhavas, these different forms, to nourish the rati of devotees who are attracted to Sakya or Vatsalya. And you see that prior to Mahaprabhu, deity form. You look at the deities that Mahaprabhu took darshan of at Nandagan. It wasn't Radha Krishna that he found in the cave. It was Balya. It was Radha, it was Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj with Krishna as a little boy standing between them. And you see with the Balavas, there's so much into vatsalya, and into it for a reason. They're feeling that the safest way to open and nourish the heart is shivatsalya. So can you see that then, if you actually have a little bit of knowledge of what you're looking at, when you're looking at Krishna Balaram, then we're talking paganda. We're talking paganda. We're not talking any other age. Can you see? Like that. So it's interesting. Question two. Why is the emphasis on Bali and Paganda in this verse? There's no mention of Radha Krishna deities. We don't have Bali or Paganda in ISKCON. What's this got to do with anything? Yeah? It's because we're talking of Krishna's characteristics when he descends. These are specific characteristics when he descends. And we're talking Naminika Lila. Yeah? Now, there's an interesting verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is quoted as 380. Have a look at this, it's really something. Very interesting verse. The Supreme Person of Godhead is eternally enjoying himself and is a shelter of all kinds of devotional servants. So actually in the word for word and in the verse you're looking at Bhakti Rasa. Prabhupada's translating is devotional service, but we're actually the shelter of all rasas, Bhakti Rasas. Although his ages are various, his age known as Kishore is best of all. Now here, it's very interesting. Because in this verse, Swayam Rupshi Krishna, Kishore is referred to as Dami. You see in the verse the word Dami. So then when you go back to 247, this is what is meant by Vigrahaya. Dami is Dhamma. You have Nam and Nami are not different. Dham and Dami are not different. So then Dham is Dhamma, or characteristics of Vigrahaya Dhamma. It's the two other ages he's manifesting. It's the Bali Paganda. And he manifests these only in Pukatli. So that's why Krishna does cover us. But you're also using the word. Isn't that same word there? Doesn't he use the word Dhami?
Dhami and Dharma.
Yeah.
Verse number?
We're looking at 318. That's a verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
Yes.
In Asakali Lila, Krishna is eternally Kishore. That's why Kishore Krishna is Dhami. And the other two ages manifested for relishing and nourishing Vatsalya and Sakya are his Dhammas. He's singing Dham and Dhammi. It's so interesting. His qualities, characteristics, attributes. But because Dhammi is eternal and his Dhammas are non different than him, they're also eternal. So these two ages are also eternal. That's pretty far up. And Jiva Goswami is Tikaram Bhakti Rasa, this verse on three that's mentioned as 380 is from Bhakti Rasa Sindhu. He also gives an interesting insight on his verse on Bhakti Rasa Sindhu, the actual verse. He tells us that Dhammi in this verse remains possessing all qualities, full manifestation of qualities. So what he's hinting at here is that Prakat Leela is richer and fuller than Aprakat.
Could you repeat that, Mother Jay? Jiva Goswami's Dhammi?
Yeah. That Dhammi in this verse refers to possessing all qualities or a full manifestation of qualities. Very interesting. And it's indicating that Krishna's Kishore Rup is best because its attributes include Bali and Paganda. Doesn't work the other way around. Can you see?
Yes.
So the Kishore Rupa is so rich and so full because it includes these. And all the forms are in the Kishore Rupa and therefore it contains all the rasas. And at his will, he can manifest any of those forms to nourish the rati of any particular deity in any particular rasa. Pretty amazing. The third question that came to my mind when I saw this was, why has Krishna Das Kaviraj used the word Vigraha and not Rupa or Swarup? Why has he used Vigraha? has he done that? And he is referring back to that original personality he mentions in text 154. Let's have a look at that. Krishna is Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal blissful spiritual body. He is irrational, he has no other reason for his supreme causable causes. Notice the word is vigraha. So he's referring back to this. And he's referring to that personality whom he describes as non-different from his expansions. That's why he's using vigraha. And he's not only meaning form, a personality, the supreme original personality. So why does Prabhupada translate vigraha as deity? Does it make any sense, does it? It's interesting. It's actually very unusual for Prabhupada, because Prabhupada doesn't usually translate vigraha like that. He usually translates, you can see many examples of it. There's a lot nuttier, there's a lot muddier. But he usually translates it as form or person or supreme personality of Godhead. He doesn't translate it as deity. So the deity manifests in the material sky. And so it seems that Srila Prabhupada is using deity to differentiate between Krishna's astakalya and nomadic form. He's making a distinction between the two. Otherwise you're going to get confused.
Yes.
Yeah? The deity manifests in the spiritual sky. And Krishna is manifesting those forms to nourish by people worshipping Balya and Buganda form. They're nourishing their rati. So he is distinguishing for this reason. And he's obviously indicating that we're talking about Nitika when he does like that. Yeah? Balya, Paganda, Kishore all manifest in deity form in the material sky. We are talking about nourishing Vatsalya, Sakya, Madhurya through their worship. Kishore age gives Madhurya Ras, which is prominent in Mahaprabhu Sampradaya. And for that reason, Kishore form is predominant. And you see, we have to see the relationship between the form and the rasa. Otherwise, it's very shallow what we're looking at. But other sampradayas may worship Balya Krishna or Paganda Krishna because that nourishes their rasa, their rasa. Yeah?
Kishore is what age onwards, Madhuri? I forget.
What's that?
Kishore, what age?
After 10.
After 10.
Yeah. Can you say just one verse? But you know, like if we don't, we can really just skip over that and think, it doesn't make much sense. But you know, we can do that a lot, especially in this work. But it's 247. Can you see? It's just one verse, but it's such an important verse to understand to have to keep things in context. Yeah?
Fact.
Super.
And Prabhupada doesn't have a profit on this, and it's a
problem. Neither is Bhagavad Gita, nor is Bhagavad. Because if you're a PhD literate, if you're actually qualified to read CC, in a high school kid's shrine, then you won't need a booklet. So we have to unpack it, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. There are innumerable incarnations of Krishna, and there's no possibility of counting them. We can simply indicate them by giving the example of the moon and the branches of a tree. The learned Brahmanas, just as hundreds and thousands of small ponds issue from great reservoirs of water, innumerable incarnations flow from Sri Hari, the Supreme Person of God, and the reservoir of power. In the beginning, Krishna incarnates himself as Purushavatar, the Vishnu incarnation. So you see how immediately now he's going straight into the six kinds of avatar. He's made his point. Now he's going to go straight into these six. In the beginning, Krishna incarnates himself as Purushavatar, or Vishnu incarnations. These are three types. After this verse, many types of expansions have been described. Now the manifestations of the lowest different potencies will be described. Vishnu has three forms called Purushas. Now, very important that because we have the kind of mentality we have, very important right at the beginning is to understand that these are not three different personalities, separate, separate, separate. They're expanding from Mahavishnu. The other two are expanding from him. They're not separate, separate people. Okay? Keep that in mind. So the first, Mahavishnu, is the creator of the total material energy. The second is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. He's expanding from Mahavishnu. Is situated within each universe, and the service Kiradaksha Vishnu is expanding from Garbhodakshaya. He lives in the heart of every living being. He who knows these three becomes liberated from the clutches of Maya. Krishna has unlimited potencies, out of which three are chief: willpower, the power of knowledge, and the creative energy. So we're throwing Icha Shakti, Jnana Shakti, and Kriya Shakti. These three. The predominator of Jnana Shakti, of the willing potency, is Lord Krishna. For by His supreme will, everything comes into existence. In willing, there is need for knowledge, and that knowledge is expressed through Vasudeva. There is no possibility of creation without thinking, really, feeling, willing, knowledge, and activity. The combination of the supreme will, knowledge, and action brings about the cosmic manifestation. Lord Shankarshan is Lord Balaram. Being the predominator of the creative energy, that's the Kriya Shakti, he creates both the material and spiritual worlds. That original Shankarshan, Lord Balaram, is the cause of both the material and spiritual creation. He is a predominating deity of egotism, and by the will of Krishna and the power of the spiritual energy, he creates a spiritual world which consists of the planet Goloka Vrindavan and Vaikuntha planets. Although there is no question of creation as far as the spiritual world is concerned, the spiritual world is nonetheless manifested by the supreme will of Shankarshan. The spiritual world is the abode of the pastimes of the eternal spiritual energy. Gokul, the supreme abode and planet, appears like a lotus flower that has 1,000 petals. The role of that lotus is the abode of the Supreme Lord Krishna. This lotus-shaped supreme abode is created by the will of Lord Ananta. So let's have a look at a few insights from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura. You know, it's just really interesting about the nature of Gokul. The world, the eternal realm Gokul, is the hexagonal abode of Krishna. Its petals are the abodes of the gopis. So we heard that in Vaikuntha, the petals, you know, when we're looking at the whole cosmos, spiritual cosmos, the petals are the Vaikuntha planets. And in Gokul, where it originally comes from, the petals are the gopis' residences. But part and parcel of Krishna, whom they are most lovingly devoted, are similar in essence. The petals shine beautifully like so many walls. The extended leaves of that lotus are the garden-like dham, the spiritual abode of Sri Radhika, the most beloved of Krishna. It's good to have something to hold on to, the mind to hold on to. So the petals of this world, Gokul, the residence of
gopis.
And the leaves are a garden-like dham. Yeah? Primarily, Gokul is a seat of transcendental love and devotion. Hence, Yamuna, Sri Govardhan, Radhakund, etc., the celestial Rajmandal, lie within Gokul. Listen to this. This is a very important point for the struggling neophytes. There are 10 tridents in 10 directions to prevent and disappoint those who are aspirants for having entrance in the Golok through meditations without the grace of Krishna. Can't gatecrest this place.
Do you repeat it?
Yes. There are 10 tridents in 10 directions to prevent and disappoint those who are aspirants for having entrance in Gokul through meditations without the grace of Krishna. Self-conceited people who try to reach this region through the powers of yoga and jnana are baffled in their attempts, being pierced by the 10 tridents. can't get Krishna's kindness.
The Gyani.
Well, let's look at the Gyan in us. You know? Not just over there. The different locations of the devotees in Goloka, according to the respective differences in the nature of their rasa, that is, mellow quality, are settled by the inconceivable power of Krishna. Do you make it another transfer? The pure devotees following the devotees of Braj and those following pure devotees of Navadvip are located in the realm of Krishna and Gaur respectively. The identical devotees of Braj and Navadvip simultaneously attain to the pleasures of service in the realm of Krishna and Gaur. So you can simultaneously serve in two places. You can be serving Gaur in Gaur Lila and Radha Krishna in Radha Krishna Lila. Depends on how the heart is expanding. Because the heart actually has three channels, three chambers. Yes?
Yes.
It has three chambers. You want to leave them dormant, only one to open, that's okay. Krishna will reciprocate on those terms. But you have other options.
So you can do up to three.
Well, you know, there's a lot more than three. You may want to enter into the eternal pastimes of Naradandastakur, Mokisudandasudhikakur. It's unlimited. The only limitation is our mind. Our minds are not quite up to measure just yet. Yeah? Okay, let's move on. We're looking at 259. By the agency of the material energy, the same Lord Sankarshan creates all the universes. But though material energy, known in modern language as nature, is not the cause of the material universe. Without the Supreme Personality of Godhead's energy, though matter cannot create the cosmic manifestation, its power does not arise from material energy itself, but is endowed by Sankarshan. Though matter alone cannot create anything, the material energy produces the creation by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Iron itself has no power to burn, but when iron is placed in fire, it is empowered to burn. This is very relevant for us. It is so relevant. We always have, when we're reading, we always have to be saying, how is this relevant for me? What can I learn from this? And it's so important because our consciousness is so dull. We've aligned ourselves so much with matter. Our consciousness is so dull. But right in fire. The more we can keep the consciousness in the fire of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, the more transformation there'll be. It's a simple thing. It's not a complex thing. Anybody can do it. You don't have to have this qualification, that qualification. You just have to have sincerity and faith. Only these two things. And the doors are open. You see? So very, very important. We are like, you know, we are so aligned with matter at the moment that we are basically dead. In our self-envy, we have reduced ourselves to 1/10,000th of a particular speck of being. This beautiful, transitional form has been reduced to insignificant speck. That speck is still very, very powerful. And it's able to mobilize this whole body, give this whole body consciousness. But how we use that consciousness is of essence. Yeah. Balaram and Krishna are the original efficient and material causes of the material world. As Mahavishnu and the material energy, they enter the material elements and create the diversities by material energies. Thus they are the cause of all causes. The form of the Lord that descends into the material world to create is called an avatar incarnation. All the expansions of Lord Krishna are actually residents of the spiritual world. However, when they descend into the material world, they are called incarnations, avatars. So, Anushangadev, has this planet For the different avatars, they have their plan. As you said, you may not only be attracted to Gohari, you may be attracted to Shinganai. You may go to places. Spiritual sky, nothing's impossible. Everything's conceivable. The glance of the material energy and power, Lord Sankarshan first incarnates as Lord Mahavishnu. In the beginning of the creation, Lord expanded himself in the form of the Purusha incarnation, accompanied by all the ingredients of material creation. First, he created the 16 principal energies suitable for creation. This was for the purpose of manifesting the material universes. Mahaprabhu tells us to have a look at the Adi 5. A few little things that are there. Main points that I drew out of it. I'll read it first. It's giving the different acharyas understanding of the nature of Krishna's 16 principal energies for creation. The commentary by Madhva on Srimad Bhagavatam mentions that the following 16 spiritual energies are present in the spiritual world: Sri, Bhu, Lila, Kanta, Kriti, Tushti, Gir, Pushti, Satya, Janajana, Jaya, Unkasani, Himala, Yogamaya, Prabhu, Ishana, and Anugraha. In his commentary on Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Sri Baladev Vijayabhushan has said that the above energies are also known by nine names: Vimala, Vakarsani, Jnana, Kriya, Yoga, Pravi, Satya, Ishana, and Anuraga. And in the Bhagavad Sandhava, Srila Jiva Goswami, they describe the Sri, Pushti, Gir, Kanti, Kirti, Tushti, Ila, Jaya, Vijaya, Vijaya, Maya, Samvit, Samdini, Fladini, Bhakti, Murti, Vimala, Yoga, Pravi, Ishani, Anagraha, etc. So you can see, isn't it amazing that, I mean, you look at the same mentality that Kanwag Dogo Champu is able to discriminate in such fine detail about the material energies that are working to keep this functional. Can you see? For us, boring, can't understand, But can you see that, you know, like, someone whose consciousness has expanded, as their consciousness has expanded, very interesting. Anything to do with Krishna is interesting. Yeah? So they're fascinated by it and they want to understand it. Karna Bhaksai Vishnu Mahavishnu is the first incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he is a master of eternal time, space, cause and effects, mind, elements, material ego, modes of nature, senses, universal form of the Lord. Gavadaksai Vishnu is the sum total of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. For further explanation, refer to Adi Lila, chapter 5, verse 83. So there, there's some interesting things, actually. I'm going to read the whole purport, because it puts a lot of things in perspective. Describing the incarnations and their symptoms, Lagu Bhagavamrita has stated that when Lord Krishna descends to conduct the creative affairs of the material manifestation, he is an avatar or incarnation. So that's when he's known as an avatar, when he descends to do something in terms of the creative affairs of the material manifestation. The two categories of avatars are empowered devotees and Tadikapma Rup, the Lord himself. An example of Tadikapma Rup is Sesha, and an example of a devotee is Vasudeva, the father of Lord Krishna. The Baladev Vijayabhushan has commented that the material cosmic manifestation is a partial kingdom of God, where God must sometimes come to execute a specific function. So it's a partial kingdom of God. The plenary portion of the Lord through whom Lord Krishna executes such actions is called Mahavishnu, who is the primal beginning of all incarnations. Inexperienced observers presume that material energy provides both the cause and the elements of the cosmic manifestation, and that the living entities are the enjoyers of material nature. But the devotees of the Bhagavat school who has scrutinizingly examined the entire situation, can understand that material nature can independently be neither the supplier of the material elements nor the cause of the material manifestation. Material nature gets the power to supply the material elements from the glance of the Supreme Purusha Mahavishnu, and when empowered by him, she is called the cause of the material manifestation. Both features of material nature as the cause of material creation and as a source of its elements exist due to the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The various expansions of the Supreme Lord who act to empower the material energy are known as plenary expansions or incarnations. As illustrated by the analogy of many flames lit from one flame, all these plenary expansions and incarnations are as good as Vishnu himself. Nevertheless, because of their activities in controlling Maya, sometimes they are known as Mayaka or having a relationship with Maya. So, you know, it's pretty mind-boggling. Very expansive understanding of how Acharya is mind-boggling.
What could be the example of that? Some could be related to Maya.
He's giving
example.
What's that?
The last line which you just said.
One that immediately comes to mind is Shiva. Mm. One that immediately comes to mind. He's Guna Avatar, but he's very much touched by the Lord. That original person of Godhead named Sakshan first lies down in the river Viraj, which serves as a border between the material and spiritual worlds. As Karna Dakshaya Vishnu is the original cause of the material creation. The Viraja, or causal ocean, is the border between the spiritual and material worlds. The material energy is situated on one shore of that ocean, and it cannot enter onto the other shore, which is the spiritual sky. Now, once again, because, you know, we read words like Viraj, Golok, like that, but unless we have something that the mind can catch and hold on to, we can't really actually find space in the consciousness for it. It's just a blur that's over there somewhere. It really doesn't have much impact on how we're thinking about things. So I just thought to read a few thoughts about Viraj. Viraj is a river that divides the material world from the spiritual world. On one side of the river Viraj is the effulgence of Brahma Loka and the innumerable Vaikuntha planets, and on the other side is this material world. It is to be understood that this side of the Viraj River is filled with material planets floating in the causal ocean. The name Viraja indicates a marginal position between the spiritual and material worlds. But the Viraj River is not under the control of the material energy. Consequently, it's devoid of the three gunas. It gets a little bit more of a picture. Another thing, because we always remember most, this is our nature as conditioned souls, but we always remember most what relates to us. Anything that relates to us, we will definitely remember it. Yes?
Can I ask a question? Technical question.
Yeah.
I thought you said that on the one side of Viraja is the material world, and on the other side of Vaikuntha planets and Brahmaloka. So isn't Brahmaloka part of this side?
You see, when I'm talking about... let me just read it again.
It says something like effulgence of Brahmaloka.
Effulgence of Brahmaloka. Yeah. Not Brahmaloka. Effulgence of it. So it's the effulgence of Brahmaloka and the effulgence of the numeral iconic planets. This is very interesting. By means of the subtle body, the jiva forsakes one's gross body and takes recourse to another. The jiva cannot get rid of the subtle body full of nisciants and evil desires unless and until he is liberated. On getting rid of the subtle body, he bathes in the viraja and then goes up to Harina. So, you know, we pretty special river. We get to bathe in it and then we go on. Interesting. Same on both sides. Does that make sense?
So its indication is more that it attacks the lotus feet of the Lord with water, and that's purification, communion.
Let's go on to 270. In the spiritual world, there is neither the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, nor a mixture of both. Nor is there adulterated goodness, nor the influence of time or Maya herself. Only the pure devotees of the Lord, who are worshipped both by demigods and by demons, reside in the spiritual world as the Lord's associates. Maya has two functions. One is called Maya, and the other is called Pradhan. Maya refers to the efficient cause, and Pradhan refers to the ingredients that create the cosmic manifestation. Again, Prabhupada is referring us to Adi 558. I won't read the whole purport, but there's a couple of sentences that are interesting in terms of what we're discussing. Maya, the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is divided into two parts. Maya is both the cause of the cosmic manifestation and the agent who supplies its ingredients. As the cause of the cosmic manifestation, she is known as Maya, and as the agent supplying the ingredients of the cosmic manifestation, she is known as Pradhan. It's just like a clarification of what we're looking at. Okay. 272. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead glances over the material energy, she becomes agitated. At that time, the Lord injects the original semana of the living entity. To impregnate with the seeds of living entities, the Lord Himself does not directly touch the material energy. By His specific functional expansion, He touches the material energy, and thus the living entities who are His parts and parcels are impregnated into material nature. Going to 274. From time immemorial, after agitating the material nature into three qualities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead places a semana of innumerable living entities within the womb of that material nature. Thus, material nature gives birth to the total material energy, Nazaran Maya Mahatattva, the original symbolic representation of the cosmic manifestation. In due course of time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Mahavishnu, or Mahavaikunthanath, by the agency of a further expansion of his personal self, places the seeds of the living entities within the womb of the material nature. First, the total material energy is manifest, and from this arise the three types of egotism, which are the original sources from which all demigods, controlling deities, senses, and material elements expand. Combining all the different elements, the Supreme Lord created all the universe. Those universes are unlimited in number. There is no possibility of counting them. Now we're going to go on to the Purusha avatars. I remind you that in the Adi book we have some maps in the fifth chapter which deals extensively with the Purusha avatars. So if you really want to have a decent look at it, we're looking at page 61 onwards, and we're looking at it in terms of the seed verses given for this chapter. But if you have a look at this in your own time, you won't do it in class because we already covered it, but everything that we've discussed today will be very easily understood because it's in map form and it's very, very clear and simple. So just by looking at these series of maps, there are five maps I think in total, six maps in total, then you can get a very clear understanding of how everything is working. Because what we've read today is quite heavy technical stuff. Okay, so let's finish this.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Krishna. Shankar Bhagavata Rajasya Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitanam Bhavibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo.